This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Enterprise BizBytes. I'm Rich Bradbury. I am joined in the studio by
Christine Wong.
Arvini Viraj.
It's a full house today, folks. Yeah. I don't remember the last time we were here together, all three of us in the studio at the same
time. At least like 6 months ago or something.
Quite a while ago, right?
Yeah, a while ago.
Well, isn't it nice to be back? Right. Now that's out of the way. Folks, we have a poll running on Twitter if you'd like to take part in that. You know where it is? It's at BFM Radio. The question, how important is it to have a younger voting population and why? Four options for you over there. Extremely important, fairly important, a little important, or not important at all. Cast your votes over there, and if you'd like to take part in our conversation, get us via WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. By way of introduction, the Malaysian youth, that's 18 to 35-year-olds.
Nice, I like the emphasis on the 35.
Well, I mean, I didn't write that.
Yeah.
Somebody else. How old are you, Arv?
About there.
About there.
Yeah. Smack in the middle of
smack in you, little liar. I believe Christine is about smack in the middle. I think you're teetering over the edge almost.
I don't like that I'm smack in the middle either. I'd rather be closer
11 months,
to one.
11 months left.
Anyway, that population has been through many crises over the past couple of years alone, politically and economically in particular, and yet they seem to still be retaining a sense of optimism overall. The ASEAN Youth Survey 2021 by Redhill will be shedding some light on this. We're going through that. Chris?
Yes, so before we speak to Redhill, so we'll be speaking to Pranav Rastogi, Managing Director of Redhill Communications, later on about the survey. Let's just take a look at some of the recent updates in some of the sectors that they're affected by. So regarding governance, the long-running campaign for a younger voting age obviously paid off, with Undi 18 being implemented for this year onwards, as well as automatic voter registration just in time for the next general election. The 5 million new voters will comprise nearly a quarter of the total electorate of 21.1 million, and their addition has given a boost to the under 40 constituency of voters. In fact, the past two governments spurred the coming of age of young social and political activists who began protesting online late last year and on the streets this year. They held protests on a range of issues, including against a national emergency imposed by Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin in 2020, former anyway, the alleged mismanagement of the COVID-19 pandemic, and also to show their support for Undi 18 as well. Now, what about the economy? Well, the youth were one of the most affected demographics in the labour market due to the pandemic, according to a report by the Asian Development Bank. The report, A Crisis Like No Other, COVID-19 and Labour Markets in Southeast Asia, stated that in the pandemic era, young workers were more likely to lose jobs due to their engagement in the directly affected sectors like hospitality, tourism, and wholesale retail trade. Mm-hmm. And it's estimated that during the pandemic, 40% of workers in Malaysia either lost their jobs or left the workforce.
So let's take a look at healthcare. The main topic has been vaccinations, with 88% of adolescents aged between 12 and 17 in the country completing their COVID-19 vaccination at the beginning of the month, as well as 97.8% of adults completing their vaccination and 99% of adults having received at least one dose of the vaccine. Unfortunately, when it comes to other forms of health, we don't seem to be doing too well. Malaysia ranked second in Asia in 2020 for cyberbullying amongst youth, according to the United Nations Children's Fund report, indicating that cyberbullying is becoming an increasingly prominent problem in the country. We have seen an awful lot of that recently on social media. Sadly, that seems to be on trend with the general issue of mental health for youth in Malaysia. The Malaysian Mental Health Association, MMHA President Professor Dr. Datuk Andrew Mohanraj, said 90% of suicide cases and attempted suicide cases were caused by underlying depression, and that the youth suicide in particular was increasing. Dr. Andrew also said non-governmental organisations in Malaysia have also risen to the occasion by offering counselling services through helplines, a service which he said had since been oversubscribed since the pandemic. Also, although the suicide rate in Malaysia was 5.5 per 100,000 compared to many other countries countries worldwide, he was doubtful that the figure reflected the actual situation. The actual number, he added, was likely to be much higher as a significant number of cases are underreported.
Mm-hmm. So looking towards the future and potential life choices, the new Youth Development Model, or MBPB 2030, will be launched in March this year to intensify efforts to develop youth and nurture Masyarakat 5.0 or Society 5.0 in the country, according to the Prime Minister. He said it will be developed based on the aspirations of young people for youth empowerment for the next decade, and that when implemented, MBPB 2030 will benefit youths by increasing their socioeconomic status via the creation of new job opportunities, education and skills. He added that it will also strengthen youth support systems, especially relations with family, society and government agencies, in their efforts to nurture a more confident and active generation of youths who are resilient and capable of taking on challenges. He added that the government will also boost the preparation of infrastructure, digital services and career markets for the entire Malaysian family, including youth. So the question is, what are the feelings of the youth about all this and more? So to get those answers, we will be speaking to Pranav Rastogi, who is the Managing Director of Redhill Communications, after the break, about their ASEAN Youth Survey.
What about you guys when it comes to this poll then? I mean, where would you be voting, excuse the pun, in today's poll?
Ooh, extremely important.
Extremely important.
Yeah,
me
yeah.
too.
Yep.
And why is that?
Well, I have only participated in one election so far, which was the most recent general election. And I thought that that was really, really empowering. And I think, you know, we've seen that the younger population in Malaysia have really taken it upon themselves to learn a lot more about the political atmosphere of the country than I think I did when I was at that age. You know, it's clear that whatever actions are taken, you know, in the next, let's say, 5-10 years, are going to directly affect the younger demographic more than any other demographic, because that's the incoming workforce. You know, that's going to be, I mean, everyone jokes about, you know, millennials and being problem stuff, but like most millennials are close to or in their 40s now. Yeah. They're no longer sort of the...
Light off.
I wasn't going to say it. But point is, you know, like we're like as kind of part of this demographic, you know, we're now in the working world. We're now learning about, you know, our country. We're now trying to effect positive change. We have to be able to do that through a democratic process as well.
Alf?
So for me, it's, I mean, if you go to vote, you're basically voting for the future. And I mean, just logically, younger people have more of the future to reap from and to live through, right? So, I mean, they have to have a say in the kind of future that they want. And I think like excluding them from any voting process, especially if you call yourself like a functioning democracy, you need young people involved. The whole thing of, you know, young people not being mature, not knowing what they want is like, it's old stuff. It's old school. They are connected to social media. They know way more than most people. And they are in tune with whatever's going on, like politically, economically. And like, you know, it's just... The basis is it's their future, so why exclude them?
I think you've just hit the nail on the head there, and I think that's a lot of the fear that some of the, you know, quote unquote older guard are a bit are worried about, is that these people know what they're talking about nowadays, you know? Okay, let's take a break. And whilst we're taking a break, you guys take a vote over on Twitter. How important is it to you to have a younger voting population, and why? Do let us know. Get us over on Twitter at BFM Radio, and on WhatsApp you can take part there, 018-789-8899. We are going to take a break, and we'll be back after these messages here on Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9.
Stay tuned to Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Boyish 40-something millionaires. BFM 89.9.
Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Welcome back, folks, to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I am joined in the studio by...
Arvind Yuvraj.
And Christine Wong.
What are we talking about today, Chris?
The youth.
Why are we talking about the youth today?
We are talking about the youth today because they've been through many crises over the past couple of years alone. By youth, by the way, we specifically mean 18 to 35 years old demographic.
Yes.
So politically and economically in particular, they've been pretty hard hit. And yet, they seem to still be retaining a sense of optimism overall. So we are, in fact, about to speak about the Red Hill ASEAN Youth Survey. Now, it's in its third year and analyzes the roles of Southeast Asia's youths as key drivers of economic, cultural, and sociopolitical change. The study attempts to take a snapshot view of their aspirations and concerns on governance, the economy, education, healthcare, life choices, and online activity through the eyes of nearly 3,000 people aged 18 to 35 across 7 ASEAN nations.
If you want to take part in that poll that we are running, the question is, how important is it to have a younger voting population and why? We have some numbers here. So let's do the numbers first before we jump into hearing from Pranav. So stay on the line, Pranav. Arv, can you just give us a quick update on the numbers, please?
Yeah. So the options were extremely important, which has 67.2%, fairly important, 28.4%, a little important, 1.5%, and not important at all at 3%. I want to know the 3%. Why? Why not important at all?
Okay, we can get to that a little bit later on. We do have some responses, but I think we'll get to them after we've heard a little bit from Pranav. Chris?
Yes, so to take us through the results, so we have Pranav Rastogi, Managing Director of Red Hill Communications, on the line waiting patiently. Thank you so much. Now, Pranav, could you give us some insights into how this demographic really feels about the issue of governance, especially since there seems to be this surge in political interest and activity from the youth?
The pandemic's governance really hammered home how important the government and its policies are in everyday life, especially for the youth in ASEAN. So they're scrutinizing governance more closely than ever, and they are increasingly wanting to have their voices heard in the political sphere. So 75% of our respondents agree that the youth voice is crucial in political campaigns. And this is interesting because it's a shift away from the historically ambivalent attitudes among the youth towards politics and governance, especially in this part of the world. Previously, the lack of interest could be attributed to low representation, low awareness, limited avenues of participation, and other factors. And while some of these obstacles still exist, change is happening despite those obstacles. The youth now have stronger opinions about politics and policies. They're exposed more to politics and policies. And I think the key thing is that they aren't afraid of making themselves heard. In Malaysia, the sentiment we're seeing from youth is that they're still largely ambivalent towards government. Fair or neutral was often the largest segment of responses on issues such as social advocacy, public engagement, and so on, except for one which stands out. Over a third of Malaysian youths felt they lacked opportunities to engage publicly on race and minority group issues. This noticeably stronger response suggests that race issues are of high concern for the youth in Malaysia, and that they want better representation and want more voice share in finding ways to address these. So what this shows overall is that the youth are paying attention to and are engaged in political happenings within their countries, which is important because they have a right to be, and they have, you know, the most to gain as the youngest. They have the most sort of lifespan ahead and the most to gain in terms of where the country is going politically, and the policies will have a, you know, increasingly longer term impact on their lives. So there's always been debates about lowering the voting age or allowing university students to get involved in politics. You know, some people say they're not mature enough, but personally, I agree that's largely because traditionally there hasn't really been the infrastructure or environment to nurture political interest among the youth. The way I see it, youth involvement and interest in politics is a fairly new development in ASEAN, but one that I think is for the better. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how this increased representation and increased voice and increased diversity can drive policies and politics in the future.
Mm-hmm. So the youth have been hit hard economically by the pandemic, with many either switching jobs or losing their jobs entirely. What are the main economic concerns for the youth going into 2022?
The Red Hill ASEAN Youth Survey shows that 87% of youth across the region agreed that job security was a big concern for them. And that's actually in contrast compared to what we're seeing in other parts of the world where, you know, this whole trend of the Great Resignation is taking place at the moment. The pandemic is likely a significant cause of this. Not only did it disrupt many conventional economic sectors in Southeast Asia, such as tourism, agriculture, manufacturing, but it also disproportionately affected micro, small, and medium-sized businesses, which make up over 90% of all businesses and account for more than half of the jobs in Southeast Asia. Given the vulnerability of these industries and the ongoing uncertainty, anxiety over employment is natural, especially as many of the youth across ASEAN are only just entering the labor force or starting to build their career. And this is compounded by, you know, financial worries such as the rising rate of inflation. Again, our findings show that 87% of youth felt that while they had enough to spend on necessities now, they were concerned about future finances. And 77% believe that they'll need to take a second job to meet their financial aspirations. And that says a lot about how worried they are about the economic situation. Having a job is the most traditional and straightforward way to earn an income to meet both basic needs. And while the pandemic has resulted in more youth getting more creative and resilient by upskilling themselves, joining the gig economy and starting digital-based businesses, the reality is that many of them still really prefer the security of a traditional job or aren't willing to sacrifice a job opportunity for the sake of, you know, benefits such as remote working and things like that. Over half of the respondents to our survey were willing to pursue job opportunities that did not offer hybrid work options. Again, in contrast to the trends we're seeing about the Great Resignation, you know, where greater flexibility seems to be the top priority. And when we apply that economic lens to Malaysia, it seems that Malaysian youths have had a lot to deal with over the past couple of years. Younger workers experience more layoffs than more mature workers, and the youth employment rate hasn't really recovered. About 13 to 15% of youths were said to be without a job in October 2021. Low wages, which has been, you know, a problem for many years, were also sort of driven further down, resulting in youth organizations in Malaysia calling for a minimum wage review and urging the budget, you know, the budget 2022 to focus on creating employment opportunities for the youth. However, our survey shows that confidence is still low among Malaysian youth in respect to economic recovery, despite budget 2022 containing 25 direct and indirect incentives for the youth, such as incentives for employers who hire graduates, you know, 150 million ringgit towards financing for young entrepreneurs and 600,000 job opportunities nationwide made available. Only 36% felt that Malaysia had implemented adequate policies for post-pandemic recovery and growth. So that's going to be an important sector to watch out for going forward.
Pranav, how do you feel about the general response to physical health matters, including, of course, the response to the COVID-19 pandemic?
With regards to the COVID-19 pandemic and the national healthcare system, about 42% of the respondents to the Red Hill ASEAN Youth Survey felt that the pandemic had positively impacted people's access to health services all across the region. And over half felt that basic healthcare services in the region were adequate. But if you drill down and you look into country-specific data, you could have very, you know, different results depending on which country you're looking at. Coming to a more Malaysia-specific context, we see that Malaysian youth are relatively satisfied with their access to and also the cost of basic healthcare services. And this suggests that you know, they believe the current healthcare system is sufficient for their needs. You know, and this is supported by we've seen that, you know, Malaysia has been named as a best nation in the world for healthcare and also prides itself on being a hub for health tourism. But there is, you know, some room for improvement. About a third felt that access and affordability were only fair and could be improved down the line. And with vaccination rollouts in Malaysia, you know, despite some initial hiccups, the rollout has been fairly smooth and efficient, making it a fairly big success story, not just across the region, but globally as well. And this is reflected, you know, in the sentiment of the youth, where nearly three quarters of Malaysian youths were very pleased and lauded the rollout of COVID-19 vaccines in Malaysia.
All right. And how about mental health, which, according to many studies, has taken a massive dive globally over the past few years? To what extent is the youth demographic affected here?
Mental health has been a key issue for youths globally, and this has been exacerbated by pandemic-related woes over the last couple of years. In 2021, the World Health Organization estimated that 1 in 7 of 10 to 19-year-olds experiences a mental disorder, and other statistics show that suicide is the fourth leading cause of death among 15 to 19-year-olds. And these are shocking statistics. depression, anxiety, behavioral disorders are all also among the leading causes of illness and disability among the youth. And this is not a new issue. It's one, you know, we're still learning to handle and manage and talk about as a society. So there are many factors at play here. Adolescence is really a crucial stage of development. People sort of are maturing through processes. They're going through physical changes and then going through greater exposure to environmental risk factors. So when you throw in media and social media and pressures and external pressures into the mix, it gets even more complicated. So it's impossible for us to protect the youth against everything. But what we can do is facilitate an environment where we can communicate openly about mental health and destigmatize it. And this is crucial. A survey shows that there's still some way to go for open discussions around mental health in ASEAN countries. Regionally, only 42% of youths felt that they could discuss pandemic-induced stress and work-life balance at work. And, you know, with the added stresses of the pandemic and adapting to a new digital future of working from home, of being, restricted in movement, it's really important, and it's more important than ever that the youth have the mental tools and have the right infrastructure in place to cope and to transition into adults as they grow beyond that. Last year, Befrienders, the national crisis hotline in Malaysia, estimated that about 41% of people who reach out to them for help were aged 30 and below. And other national studies also show that youths are more likely to attempt suicide in Malaysia compared to other age groups. Coupled with our own findings that only 45% of Malaysian youth respondents felt like they could talk to others about their mental health, this drives home the need for better communication and destigmatization around this issue. The silver lining here is that we're seeing different sectors of society starting to work together in Malaysia to change the conversation. So multiple nonprofits have come together and are leading the charge for greater mental health awareness and healthier discourse. And at government level, the budget 2022 provisioned around 70 million ringgit to tackle mental health issues. And the Youth and Sports Ministry also recently launched a mental health service for youth in Kuala Lumpur. It's an encouraging encouraging progress, and it's one that we think is crucial that has to grow and continue over the next few years.
If you're only just joining us, we are on the phone with Pranav Rastogi. He's the Managing Director of Red Hill Communications. We're talking about their ASEAN Youth Survey in its third year, and it analyses the roles of Southeast Asia's youths as key drivers of economic, cultural, and socio-political change. The study attempts to take a snapshot view of the aspirations and concerns on governance, the economy, education, healthcare, life choices, and online activity. We are asking you a question, and the question is, how important is it to have a younger voter population and why? That's over on Twitter. If you want to take part in the poll, get us over at BFM Radio. Take part in the conversation over on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have some of the updates from Twitter, and we've got a couple of messages over on WhatsApp that we'll get to too. Before that, some music from Blur with Park Life here on Enterprise BizBytes, BFM 89.9.
Stay tuned to Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Budding fresh ministers, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm still in the studio with
Arvind Viraj
and Christine Wong.
We're asking you a question. That question is, how important is it to have a younger voting population and why? Options over on Twitter are extremely important, fairly important, a little important, or not important at all. Mm-hmm. And the reason that we are talking about this is because we are having a look at the Red Hill
ASEAN Youth Survey.
There you go.
Yes.
And we've been going through some of the figures in that, of course, with our guest. He's still on the line with us right now. Let's quickly have a look at some of the responses we have over on Twitter, though. Arv, can you pick up some of the comments, please?
Yep. So this comes from Xiong, who says, okay for young to vote, but I hope they have reached a certain level of maturity before they do. I personally would say maturity has nothing to do with age, as we've seen time and time again. There's one from Christina who says, the younger ones know more about what's going on in the country through their present work and life experience. The older ones vote based on sentiments of the past. Mm. That's my full name, says, because they're the ones saddled with today's decision in the decades to come. And Hillary says, it is part of the democratic process to have citizens involved, since they will be the ones that are impacted by the decisions of government. The young are also affected, so it is fair fair to have them included in this important process.
Scroll down to the bottom. Oh, there's one I just quickly want to address from Cece, who says, it's time for the old folks to go away. Well, you know, strong opinion, but, you know, you can have that opinion, and some people might agree with you, some people might not. Mm-hmm. Get in touch, folks. Take part in the polls. It is over at BFM Radio, and, of course, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Chris, do you want to pick up with our guest?
Yes, I do. Thank you so much for staying on the line with us, Pranav. Now, let's take a look at the future opportunities for the youth. What life experiences are they prioritizing, and why?
In the Redhill ASEAN Youth Survey, we asked the youth of Southeast Asia to rank 9 areas of life aspirations in order of importance. So there's some slight variations in the ranking across countries, but in general, education, family, and career were mainstays for all. And other top choices, including personal development and healthcare. So it's no surprise, for instance, that family ranks highly amongst all countries, as you know, Asian cultures are very family-focused in general. But we saw that education ranked in the top 3 for all countries except for Singapore, where it ranked 5. We also asked for the views of ASEAN youths on building for the future. Over half were optimistic about being able to afford a home. And this could be attributed to a number of reasons. It could be because of the regional property market being depressed at that particular time due to people holding off on big ticket purchases over pandemic uncertainty. But again, being financially able to build a family was another matter. Respondents in most countries, except for Indonesia and Vietnam, felt that it would be financially challenging to do so. So there are many factors to tie into this, but the most obvious is, you know, rising inflation rate, in some countries, unemployment, youth unemployment rising as well. On the entertainment front, most youths across the region took a more cautious outlook on their ability to spend, and you know, 71% showed a significant presence for online shopping over in-store visits. We also saw priorities begin to shift away from pure sale price to being more sustainability focused. We also saw a strong desire for international travel among youths. While the pandemic injected uncertainty over travel plans, only 14% said that they would not travel after lockdown restrictions eased. For Malaysia, youths prioritize education, healthcare, personal development, career, and family in that order. But the overall percentages were lower than other countries. The top choices, the top choice education was only 82% compared to other countries where the top choices were all over 90%. So this suggests that there's quite a wide range of priorities amongst Malaysian youths as compared to some of the other markets. Nearly 60% were confident of being able to afford a home in Malaysia. And again, this has been helped along with incentives such as the home ownership program and governmental housing projects that we're seeing in Malaysia as well. Given the existing property overhang, more developers are also turning to mid-range projects to make their projects more affordable and increase sales. Malaysians were also less pessimistic than their regional peers over the financial viability of starting a family. But 57% still believed it would be financially challenging to do so. As with other countries, addressing the cost of living may go a long way towards changing their mindset on this topic. Despite relatively stable inflation, the key is that different groups experience inflation differently. Low-income groups, for example, are more affected when food prices rise as they spend more of the income on food. And we've seen some drastic rises in 2021. Some essential items and vegetables have increased in cost by 100% in response to logistic issues on global food inflation.
Mm-hmm. So naturally, this demographic is also commonly referred to as the digital natives of the world. What are their thoughts on digital reliance and the rampant spread of misinformation?
There's no question that social media is the domain of the youth. Many grew up with it. They're digital natives. And that's what we're seeing across ASEAN as well. Respondents from nearly all countries, the only exception being Cambodia, said that they spent a staggering 5 to 10 hours a day on social media platforms. And I actually had to double check that and make sure that it wasn't 5 to 10 hours a week, because that's what I would consider something that's a little more, something that's a little easier to get my head around. But 5 to 10 hours a day, yeah, it surprised me. It's almost unheard of for the youth that we survey to not be on social media. Unsurprisingly, it also ranks as by far their most preferred platform for them to stay up to date on news and current events. So thanks to widespread use of social media and familiarity with digital communications, at least 71% of youth across ASEAN said that they're confident that they can differentiate fact and opinion on social media. Most are aware of the effect of online communications on their thoughts, with 45% saying that online political discourses could influence their personal political opinions. So with youth spending so much of their time online, they're also more sensitive towards the need for better regulation and better protection of this space as well. And this also can be connected back to our earlier conversation about mental health. In Malaysia, about half of the youth we surveyed said they spend about 5 to 10 hours a day on their social media accounts. However, less than 30% agreed that domestic regulations could effectively protect against online bullying and curb the spread of fake news, revealing their lack of trust. We can see a reflection of the sentiment in the emergence of local fact-checking initiatives such as Fact Check Lab, My Check, and other initiatives that have started.
Pranav, we've got one more question before we let you go. And with all this in mind, what should businesses think about when it comes to providing for the incoming and current workforces? You know, looking at their priorities and thoughts, what incentives or policies could be considered for talent attraction and retention?
Financial stability remains the primary driving factor for the youth to seek a job due to concerns over the rising cost of living and also how that will affect future planning. But it's also important for businesses to realize that salary isn't the be-all and the end-all. Worker retention is much higher when their needs are met, and we've seen, you know, through the findings of the Red Hill ASEAN Youth Survey that those needs are often many-fold and must be addressed through a variety of different ways. So let's talk about this by using Malaysia as an example. If we account for the fact that many respondents may still be studying, that leaves the next most important factors as healthcare, personal development, career, and family. So this has various implications for an employer. You know, businesses may want to address these needs through steps such as providing more robust employee healthcare benefits, offering training programs and workshops so they can upskill, providing career advancement opportunities, and ensuring a better balance between work and life for employees to spend time with their families and you know, focus time on personal interests as well. Remote work and flexible hours have many positives if managed well, including, you know, better balance, better work-life balance, but they can have, you know, adverse effects if not. Many Malaysians reported being expected to be on call at all hours of the day when working from home, and they were more prone to burnout as a result of dissolving work boundaries. So this also ties into the increasing need for better workplace mental health support. Businesses should avoid treating flexibility and work-life balance as, you know, philanthropy or altruism, but they need to see it as a new way of doing business and should create policies that are better placed to support employees and also trust employees when they're working from home, rather than, you know, being sort of too micromanaging and checking in on them and not trusting them and thinking that, you know, work from home means holiday, so to say. Low wages are not unique to Malaysia, but they are a cause for concern. Salary-related reasons have been the number one factor for Malaysians leaving their job for years, especially given, you know, stagnant salary levels and rising living costs. The common practice in Malaysia is to offer an increment based on the person's last drawn salary, but, you know, this severely disadvantages people who enter the workforce with a low starting pay or may have taken breaks in their career and then come back. And this is especially, you know, true given that in 2020, most new graduates reported only earning between 1,000 and 1,500 ringgit. Even with a generous average annual increment, you know, of say sort of close to 10% every year, how long will it take for them to reach, you know, a livable salary? So to prevent frequent job hoppers, employers really need to ensure that the employee salaries are commensurate with industry standards, industry averages, and also invest in upskilling the employees as well as offering, you know, career advancement opportunities. This is far more cost and time efficient than constantly importing experience by hiring and retraining new staff. At the end of the day, happy, cared for employees are by far more effective and productive. They are the best advocates and the foundations of business success. I've long said that people are the most important part of companies, and To attract a new generation of talent, businesses need to evolve with the times and listen to their wants and needs and look at how they can incorporate them into building a more inclusive and diverse workplace. And that's really going to have long-term benefits and lead to longer-term success, both for employees and for employers as well.
That was great. That was Pranav Rastogi, the Managing Director of Red Hill Communications. Guys, what do you think about what Pranav had to say?
Yep. Just mm-hmm. totally agree with yeah. with all of that. I mean, we've been literally talking about the same thing for 2 years now.
Yeah.
With the same conclusions, where basically, if your employees are happy, so will your customers.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And the end part there about, you know, people are the most important part of the business.
Yep.
And
yeah, yep, yep,
very important. Yep. Stuff.
If we could just echo what he said, then yeah. we'd be echoes of what he said.
Yep.
Go.
Anyway, enough about that. Let's get the final numbers on the poll. Give it a quick refresh of, and let's run through these numbers. You should probably do this before your eyes fail you because you're getting out of it. Anyway, what are the final numbers?
66.4% for extremely important, 28.2% for fairly important, and 2.7% each for a little important and not important at all.
Great. I want to thank, of course, Pranav Rastogi for joining us on today's show. Very interesting topic today. And thanks all of you for taking part in the polls, of course, and sending across your messages. But it is time for us to wrap up for today. But if you did miss any part of this show, don't forget you can download it wherever you normally listen to it from. We suggest the BFM app. It's available in the Apple App Store or Google Play. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. But don't go anywhere. Coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is, of course, the Breakfast Grill replay. Today, JF Technology Berhad was first established in 1999. They manufacture and innovate test contacting solutions for global integrated circuit makers. They are on the Breakfast Grill, or were on the Breakfast Grill, to talk about their products and the company's involvement in 5G testing and automotive applications. Interesting stuff. That's all coming up in a little bit. To take us up to the top of the hour, we've got some music from the Supremes with Stoned Love. I want to thank Arv and Christine for joining me on the show today. Are you both back tomorrow, or is it just back to me and Christine tomorrow?
We'll all three be back tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Christine. Yeah, let's,
wow.
Yeah, yeah.
We're being blessed.
Wow.
Oh.
On that note, we're going to say goodbye. This has been Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Enterprise Biz Bytes was presented by Allianz Malaysia, empowering businesses to build confidence in tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.